Hello and welcome to Lewis Needers Law and the Lewis Needers Podcast. I'm your host, Holly Sonnebend, and today we'll be talking to partner and higher rights advocate at Lewis Needers, James Riley. James is a highly experienced lawyer who has spent 18 years specialising in criminal law, during which time included being a founding partner of a specialist criminal defence firm in Oxford. His practice encompasses financial white-collar fraud, sexual offences, large-scale drug offences and murder. James frequently conducts trials in the Crown Court and proceedings in the Court of Appeal and High Court. Likewise, James often co-defends alongside Queen's Counsel and in multi-handed complex cases. James has a natural ability for advocacy, and his down-to-earth manner enables him to build a connection with juries and present his clients' cases skillfully. He has established a reputation for hard work, meticulous preparation, and a no-nonsense but courteous approach to all cases he deals with. James is frequently instructed in some of the most serious cases heard in the Crown Court. James will be joining us today to discuss possession and production of a Class A drug named DMT. James, welcome to the show. So, James, first of all, what is DMT?
So dimethyltryptamine is a hallucinogenic drug which occurs naturally in a number of plants, including the Mimosa hostilis bark. It can also be produced synthetically. It's a drug that occurs. There's some in your body as we speak. There's some in your brain. It occurs all over the place, and it's used historically in South America. Small amounts found all over the place, as I say. It's the drug that your brain releases when you die, which is when you see the light, and that's what it is. It is actually now being used in its freebase form, and there are a number of steps that are used to bring it out of a natural plant product into its freebase form. It can be ground into a powder and added to water and vinegar in a pot. The mixture is then boiled, is then allowed to cool. It's strained through a filter into a glass jar. You then add caustic soda to the jar and mixing it, and then adding hexane. Then you place a lid on the jar, shake it, allow the contents to separate into two separate layers, remove the top layer of the liquid, the hexane containing the extracted DMT. Subsequently, you evaporate the hexane, which should leave you with the DMT freebase. The most popular way of taking DMT is by smoking it in a herbal mixture. This is sometimes called changa, and to be effective, the changa will contain the DMT extracted and a monomace oxidase inhibitor enzyme known as a MAOI, such as harmine, and the human body breaks it down. It's smoked, it's ingested, and it has psychoactive properties. Yeah, that's what it is.
Can you take us through your case before the Isleworth Crown Court?
Yes. So the case that I had before the Isleworth Crown Court, well, initially the case was an importation of Class A drugs. My client was arrested for that. 2 kilos of a substance called Capivine was sent to the defendant's home address from Holland. The police intercepted this and interviewed him. And they interviewed him. It's quite clear that they had no idea what DMT was and spent most of their time questioning him about this Capivine, which, of course, was totally legal. What happened in the end was that he was eventually charged with production, possession with intent to supply, and simple possession of 664 grams of DMT, which, of course, is a Class A drug. The prosecution case was simply that the Mimosa hostilis bark was ground up, and that's a preparation, and therefore that falls within the Misuse of Drugs Act. Prosecution was saying that that was illegal, and that the defendant, what, A, had produced the DMT, B, was going to sell it, and at very least, he was in possession of it. The defendant was a man of good character. He was a man who suffered with severe back pain and used these herbal remedies to continue his life in a normal manner, and used this drug and was at pains to say that it was not a social exercise. It was something that he did spiritually and to heal himself. The prosecution said that this was an illegal drug and that he was going to be selling it. And what made things worse was that the prosecution expert said that this drug could be ingested by simply eating the bark. They actually said it may or may not be possible to eat this bark and ingest the drug, which of course created the case against him. And we were before the Isleworth Crown Court trying to defend it.
What are the sentencing guidelines for these offences?
Well, the sentencing guidelines really highlight the problem. So the importation of Class A drugs of this amount, he would be looking at a range of 9 to 13 years imprisonment. For possession with intent to supply this amount of Class A drugs, he would also be looking at 9 to 13 years imprisonment. And for production, again, the same, 9 to 13 years. For possession of the drug, it would be in the range of a fine all the way up to 1 year imprisonment.
What's the law on possession of DMT? And regarding preparation specifically, what would be classified as illegal under the Misuse of Drugs Act?
As I referred to earlier, the DMT exists in nature and it exists all over the place, including in people's brains. In its natural state, it's absolutely legal. There's no problem with it. The difficulty comes because the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971 says that when anything has been prepared or a preparation has happened, it then becomes an illegal drug according to the Misuse of Drugs Act. So in its raw natural state, the Mimosa hostilis bark is legal to possess, but it's when something happens to it or it is prepared very much like psilocybin mushrooms, they're legal to have in your field, but as soon as you dry and pack them, they become illegal because they've then been prepared. So it's difficult to say what a preparation is, and the case law is vague. The problem, of course, is that the courts interpret the law in such a way that really what they're doing is putting out policy decisions rather than sticking to it to the facts of each individual drug. For example, the case of Hodder versus DPP described or defined preparation as to make ready or fit, to bring into a suitable state, to subject to a process of bringing into a required state, which sounds like it's really helpful. But what does that actually mean? A required state? What does that mean? What is a suitable state? That doesn't really help us. Further case law on this subject was of assistance. There's a case of Stevens and Cunliffe, which says that a preparation requires the substance to be altered by human action to put it into a condition in which it can be used for human consumption. At that point, the legal arguments were looking pretty good for the defence, because the case before the Isleworth Crown Court was one where essentially what the prosecution was saying is that this ground-up bark is available or able for human consumption. And we were arguing that it wasn't, and indeed our expert said that it wasn't. It did sound at that point like we were on pretty strong footing, but there is other case law which isn't so good. So, for example, plucking a leaf off a cannabis plant is regarded as a preparation. Wrapping up the dried magic mushrooms is classed as a preparation. So not much has to be done before it falls foul of the 1971 Act. And of course, when you go before a court, the judges will all look to interpret the statute and the case law in line with policy decisions rather than sticking to the bare facts. So in this case, what the prosecution missed that we didn't was that there was actually three leaves which had the DMT solution poured all over them, and that obviously was a preparation, and they were going to argue, or they could have argued had they noticed it, that that was a production as well. Of course, the defence would have said, I didn't produce it. I bought it that way.
And what was the Aziz case?
So the Aziz case is a case from the Court of Appeal, which talks about or gives a ruling on ayahuasca. And ayahuasca is, I suppose you could loosely term it, as a hallucinogenic drink. The defendant was convicted of producing and preparing ayahuasca and sought leave to appeal on the basis that it was for religious reasons. It didn't get to the House of Lords, and the Court of Appeal, rather unsurprisingly, didn't give a leave to appeal against the conviction. and essentially just said that they found that the infusions was a preparation and was a production as well, and therefore gave no leave to appeal. So it didn't really help us in relation to this case, where we were essentially arguing, first of all, what we've done is not even a preparation, that the steps that one needs to go through before human consumption can take place haven't happened, and therefore it isn't a preparation. So the law is a little bit up in the air in terms of that. And the judgment from Aziz is slightly convoluted in that it mixes the definition of production and preparation in a way. The client's life was really turned upside down. He was a very intelligent man, leading a productive life, and he took this DMT not for recreational or social reasons, but really to heal himself, as he put it, mentally and spiritually. When the police came round, they took away all his equipment and all the herbs and plants that he had. So he was forced to go to his GP, who unfortunately prescribed tramadol for him. So instead of being able to work and have a productive life, he was taking lots and lots of tramadol and was in constant pain. He was unable to work properly. He was becoming confused about things. He really was struggling.
And what was the ultimate result?
Well, the ultimate result is that we put forward some legal argument to get rid of the possession with intent to supply. Prosecution agreed with that off the bat, so that problem went away straight away. They never actually charged with the importation, so that problem went away. And the last big problem he had would have been production of a Class A drug. And of course, as you know, that would have carried between 9 to 13 years if he was found guilty of it. Luckily, I managed to convince prosecution to not continue with that, and that my arguments in relation to production were pretty strong, and that he ended up pleading guilty to mere possession and paid a £500 fine, and that was the end of the matter.
James, thank you so much for your time. Where can people contact you with potential inquiries?
So they can contact me from my details, which are on the Lewis Needus Law website. My mobile number, which is on all the time, 07764 899 316, or my email address, which is jreilly, R-E-I-L-L-Y, at lewisneedus.co.uk.
Fantastic. That's all from the Lewis Needus podcast today. You can find us at Lewis Needus Law on Twitter and at lewisneedus.co.uk. Thank you for listening.